the 11th chapter. Hear the word of God. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, "Lord, he whom we love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness is not unto death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by means of it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go into Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were but now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him." Thus he spoke, and then he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awake him out of sleep." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us go also, that we may die with him." Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary sat in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, he who is coming into the world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying quietly, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to weep there. Then Mary, when she came where Jesus was and saw him, fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved and in spirit and troubled. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. I knew that thou hearest me always, but I have said on this account of the people standing, I have said this on account of the people standing by, that they may believe that he would send me. When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and his feet bound with bandages, and his face wrapped up with a cloth. Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. This is the word of the Lord. So the thought of death hangs over this whole passage. At the beginning, Lazarus is mortally ill, and then he dies. And for all of us mortals, that means it gets our attention. There's nothing wrong with that. For us, Christianity is not solely an answer to the problem of death, but along the way, the Christian view of the universe does include what we think is a cogent answer to that problem. The resurrection of Jesus means that death is not the last word on life. Because we're focusing for several weeks on conversations that Jesus has with people and what we can learn from the give and take of those situations, that death and restoration to life of Lazarus is not the aspect of this passage that we're going to focus on today, even though it's obviously the center of the passage, the most important dimension of what's happening here. Lazarus, though, does not speak, whether to Jesus or to anyone else. And so today we're going to focus on several bits of interrelated conversation that Jesus has with his disciples and Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, around the edges of that central issue of Lazarus' death. So first let's follow the thread of these conversations, and then we'll see what they might mean for us and for Lazarus. And for all of us, for whom death is a serious, pressing issue. Someone, we don't know who, brought Jesus a message from Mary and Martha that his friend, their brother, Lazarus, is sick. And to his disciples, Jesus responds that this is not a sickness that leads to death in the end. Which is a strange thing for him to say, because clearly, in the meantime at least, it is a sickness that leads to death and does lead to death. We as readers of the story know that Lazarus will die, and we have to take it for granted that Jesus knows this too. Lazarus' illness and all that follows from it will be an occasion for people to see God at work. But Jesus opens the conversation with this strange saying. It's not an illness, a sickness, that leads to death. And so we have to say it is at the very least an illness that leads through death. And Jesus has a different end in mind. After a couple of days, Jesus knows Lazarus has died, and then, not Jesus, but the gospel writer says another extraordinarily strange thing. Jesus loved Lazarus. He knows he's died. He loved him. So, therefore, he stayed where he was for another 2 days. Somehow, out of love for Lazarus and for Mary and Martha, Jesus just cools his heels for 2 days before he starts on the 2-day journey. he again downplays the death as a factor. He says Lazarus has fallen asleep. And as a result, after a couple of days, he now wants to go back into the danger zone, that is Judea, the region in the south that includes Jerusalem, and as well as the Mount of Olives, where Mary and Martha and Lazarus live. He's taken refuge again in the relative safety of his home territory in the north after a previous dangerous, ill-advised, from his disciples' point of view, journey to be down there for a festival. His disciples think he's crazy to want to go back. He asks, are there not 12 hours in the day? Which is a way of saying that there's still time before his arrest and suffering. So they can go safely. The disciples don't believe it. And Thomas, who's known for doubting something else later on, doubts this also. But he's willing to go along. He says, well, we may as well go and die with him. Doubting here also that Jesus could be right about the idea that it's safe. So the disciples try another objection. Waking up Lazarus from a nap is not a good enough reason for a two-day walking trip into danger. So Jesus clarifies by saying that Lazarus has fallen asleep. It means our friend Lazarus has died, and that this will be an occasion for renewed faith in God's freedom and ability to act personally in the universe. So when Jesus and the disciples come to Bethany, there's been a second conversation, this time with Martha. And this time, too, it is about faith in Jesus in the face of the awfulness of death. Martha at first seems to blame Jesus. If you had been here, if you had cooled your jets for those 2 days out of love for Lazarus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And then she hints that even now, Lazarus' death could be turned into a sleep from which awakening is possible. And Jesus confirms this. Your brother will rise again. But now Martha shifts that hope off into the distant future, to the end of the world, when she understood that everyone would have a new kind of life. And what Jesus says now is at the very heart of the gospel. That new life does not have to wait until the end of the world. Jesus himself is already the resurrection and the life. The history of the universe, God's story with the world, is already fulfilled in him. And so then there's a third conversation, now with the other sister, Mary. And she says the same thing Martha did. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. And by this time, everyone, including Jesus, is now openly weeping. Perhaps everyone for their own reasons. And so at this point, Jesus asks for directions to the grave. Once they're there, Martha has another objection, very practical. He's been dead at this point 4 days, and the unembalmed body will have decomposed quite a bit. There will be an odor, and that's the least. But this doesn't stop Jesus, and the dramatic moment unfolds when Jesus invites Lazarus to return to his family and take up his life again where he left it off. A dramatic moment. But to say more about it is for another day. It seems to me that these conversations Jesus has with his disciples and then with Mary and Martha raise at least two important things for us to think about. One is, what matters about Jesus? Why is he important? These conversations show that we really can't reduce the importance of Jesus to his teaching and his ethical example. It's been common for Christians in the last 150 or 200 years to want to say that what really matters about Jesus is what he teaches us, what he tells us, what he shows us about how to live a good life. And in some ways it's true that he does do that. There are these occasions when we clearly, though, cannot simply ask, as the old bracelets that we all wore a few years ago asked, what would Jesus do? And then assume in some simple way or flat-footed way that it's possible or ethical for us to do the same. Because in some cases, what Jesus would do or did do is simply not possible for us, because none of us is God living in human life. We don't know whatever God knows, and we can't rely absolutely on our own goodness or our own moral choices. We can't rely on the idea that we even know what the good would be in particular. We can't exercise the creative power of God to do whatever can be done in the universe. We have limitations that Jesus doesn't have. So, upon hearing that my friend is sick and will die more or less immediately, if there's something I can do to help, it is not okay for me to say that out of love, I'm going to hang out here for another 2 days. What would Jesus do is going to lead me into the, or at least what Jesus did do, will lead me into what I can only think is an unethical choice. It is not an option available to me, if I can help my friend not die, to just cool my jets for 2 days and not do it. So what would Jesus do? His ethical example is not a usable question for me. The question then is, what does Jesus ask me to do? And that's likely to be quite different. And a second question these conversations seem to raise as they unfold is, can I trust Jesus? Or if you like, can I trust God? That was an issue in one way or another for every person Jesus talked with about Lazarus' situation in this passage. Every single person, the disciples and Mary and Martha, they all doubt that Jesus could be right, or that it would be advisable to go along with what he says. They don't fundamentally trust him. And it's an issue for every one of us. The disciples began by not trusting Jesus' judgment. He intends to go to Judea to be with this family. But the disciples think they know better than Jesus does what needs to happen in this situation. They need to stay safe in the safety of Galilee. Judea is too dangerous, and Lazarus doesn't need it. And when they arrive, Martha first blames Jesus for his absence at Lazarus' death, and then she says his words of reassurance are pie in the sky talk about the end of the world. She doesn't trust what he says to be true. And Mary repeats Martha's words of blame and has nothing to add except tears. And yet through all of this, there's also an undercurrent of, if anyone knows what to do and can do it, which no one may, but if anyone does, surely it is Jesus. And so even in their skepticism and mistrust, the disciples go with him on the trip. Mary and Martha accompany Jesus to the tomb. And at the tomb, their questions and doubts are not so much answered as they're transformed. For those of us who ask these kinds of questions, whether Jesus is important and whether you can trust him in the face of death and tragedy, you may find that Jesus changes your questions in a similar way. Some of us are asking those kinds of questions this week in light of the tragic shooting in Las Vegas. If you want to trust Jesus just so he can make your life better today, so he can keep you from experiencing disillusionment or pain from loss and grief and disappointment, so that he can fill your life with pleasure and abundance, or so that he can make the world so evil doesn't have its way somehow, it might not work out in that exact way. It's far more likely that Jesus will show up in your life and in the life of the world, whatever is going on here, whatever pain there is, and whatever tragedy and whatever evil seems to be having its way. Possibly he'll show up sometime after you expected, or after you thought he should have been there. Nevertheless, he will take moments of grief and loss and tragedy, or moments of joy and pleasure for that matter, and act in those moments to show you and all of us the creative and life-giving glory of God in the face of it all. Thanks be to God.
Thank you.
Sloan family, please come forward, and John.